Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. Another jam-packed hour on a Reaction Monday. Jacob Albrock, TJ Cleland with you here on KFH. Thanks for watching us on 12 News Plus, on Facebook, on YouTube, on X. We've got Joshua Briscoe joining us to talk Chiefs. We've got Jalen Thompson joining us to wrap the Royals season. It's all what's on tap. Brought to you by the Wichita Brewing Company, now featuring the Cajun Bacon Ranch Pizza with an Alfredo garlic sauce based, topped with chicken, bacon, mozzarella, and Cajun seasoning drizzled in ranch. The Cajun Bacon Ranch Pizza, now available in a lunch or full size at WBC Pizza and Beer, made here. TJ, if I had to say power rank in terms of disappointment this weekend, KU falling at home to Cincinnati, giving up 603 yards of offense, the Ryder Cup American shortcomings, or yourself dropping a cupcake in the end zone and your shame being broadcast on national television? How would you play those out?
You know the answer to that question. You know what number one is. I can't.
So for those of you that didn't see, there's a great shot in the game. We've got it on social because we're giving TJ a hard time. Ball sails deep of the end zone, right where TJ is parked to shoot the game. I mean, hits him right in the chest, and he can't complete the play. And it was replayed and talked about by the announcers. That's a tough day. I don't know how you recover from that. It's a tough day.
The best part about it is that I've had about 15, 20 people text me about it. And on TV, it looks like I get drilled in the head, like straight to the dome. And it didn't happen that way. It was a like perfectly arcing ball right towards me, had the camera, stopped recording because I was like, I'm catching this football. Stopped recording and moved the camera out of the way and went for the one-arm basket catch, went to haul it in, and the spiral just drilled me right in the pec. Bounced straight off my chest away from me. So I went for the catch. I wasn't a helpless creature here taking this off the head. And that might make it worse. Like everybody else thinks I was just like caught off guard and just wore it. And they're like, why didn't you try to catch it? Like I tried with every fiber of my being to catch that football.
Tried
and I
hard,
ended up like that.
But didn't. We didn't catch it. You know, there's that. Look, the Ryder Cup. We'll spend more time on this when we have more time tomorrow. The Americans fall short. That's wildly disappointing. All the chatter now, because the Europeans got a little spicy, especially Rory McIlroy chirping back at the crowd. I'm gonna give you two takes on that have nothing to do with how disappointed I am that the Americans lost. There is a line when you're heckling, and I want the American fans heckling the Europeans. We all know what the line is. Like don't say things you wouldn't say in front of your kids and your mom, but heckle away, like as much as you possibly can. Be as obnoxious as you can. Get in their heads and for all of that. And on the flip side of it, but there's a line, don't cross it. On the flip side of it, Rory, golf doesn't need to be held to some higher standard when we're talking about the Ryder Cup. Like, no, like stop lecturing people about the way, like, don't do that. Don't do that, Shooter McGavin. Like, you know, let fans do their thing. If they cross the line and you want to chirp back, I think that's great. I think it's even better. Like the F-bombs, like to you and you and the crowd, like that's good stuff. Like that is highly, it's why people love the Ryder Cup. Yeah. You got like, it drives me crazy when athletes lecture fans and coaches lecture fans. They're paying to be there. No, they shouldn't act a certain way. And yes, there are some of them that I'm certain crossed a line, but you can't lecture them. You can't do that. That's never a good look to me.
That's the one thing that he said is that like the higher standard thing is the only thing that people are kind of getting up in arms about. Like the fact of the matter is, I mean, you go to a football game, like you don't want to be sitting next to the guy who's screaming obscenities at the linebackers, right. You know, like that's the line. You can't do that, but you can hoot and holler and, you know, the big third down stop is, oh, Vuvuzela is coming out, everything like that. That's what the Ryder Cup should be. And I think that that's what Rory is saying.
I don't even mind chirping at a guy specifically. I mean, at a younger age, we used to love going to baseball games and chirping a little bit with the outfielders. You know, we'd have bad seats out there and we'd, you know, you'd have fun with them, but look, there's a line. We all know what the line is. Like, you know what it is. You don't even have to say what it is. You know what it is. Like,
I think that's the part that's just driven all of this stuff. And it's because it's a little bit of a, you know, you're in a group, and especially it's because of the Ryder Cup. Like, this doesn't happen at other golf events. And it's not because it's just because it's the Ryder Cup. It's the fact that it's team golf and you're rooting for a team against the other team. Like, you're not going to do this in golf because then you're a bully. It's just like, hey, Rory McIlroy, I don't like you specifically. Like, you're not going to, that's the only reason that this gets to this point in the Ryder Cup. So I like it. It's a ton of fun. It has no place outside of the Ryder Cup. Like, obviously,
I will agree with that. Yes.
Like waste management, like hooping, like the Wichita Open, like that's the fun part that it's leaning towards. And it's getting, even like normal events are becoming more and more like that, of having fun and, you know, playing music on the golf course and everything. That stuff's awesome. I think that the fact of like noise making and chirping and like screaming and everything like that, and you're not going to go to the whatever, John Deere run and do that at golfers just out there golfing at their 7 a.m. tee times, you know?
Yeah, we got our butts kicked and we didn't feel good about it. And it was on our home turf. You got to understand where the fans are coming from. I guess good for the Americans for making it interesting on the way back. Let's talk KU here for the next 5 minutes or so, TJ, while we have it. You were there. That was a game they should have won. They should have been able to be better defensively than they were. They should have had the interception on the final drive in the nail, but they didn't. They didn't. And they give up 603 yards of offense. KU's got to be able to win games, TJ, when they gain 600 yards of offense. And when Jalen Daniels plays that way, and when they're going, like, you have to be able to win those games. And they couldn't. And that, for the first time, I think it's fair to say we're disappointed in KU this year, because they should have won that game.
That's the thing, is that, you know, sitting there on the sidelines watching this game, it's like, yeah, the defense has had some struggles, but like KU's playing really well. Like, this is a fun game. Like, this is going to be a really awesome win for this offense to do this. And then you get down to the 30-second mark, and I told somebody, you know, they had the game-winning interception in their hands, and it popped out. And in the time, I saw it, and I was like, ah, that sucks. Game would have been over, but whatever. I mean, there's only 20 seconds left. And then, sure enough, 60-yard pass, and it's like, you got to be kidding me. Like, how on earth can we not play prevent defense from 80 yards away? And so, like, that's it was a really, really good Saturday with a couple of flaws. And then it was just a punch in your gut, leaving you on the floor in the final 30 seconds. So that loss sucks. Like, just to be frank about it, because this team had the potential. I mean, to be a top four team in the Big 12.
Still does. Like, that's the thing. It still does.
But Cincinnati's not a top four team. And that's the problem.
Well, look, I maybe top four is even a bit generous for Kansas. Also, I don't think we know yet in the Big 12. I think the Big 12 is going to be upside down and topsy-turvy and wild and weird and all of these things. To me, Texas Tech has probably looked the best. I haven't seen enough BYU yet. Houston's 4-0. I haven't seen a second of Houston football this year. We've seen Iowa State and Arizona State. Arizona State probably doesn't look as good as they did a year ago. Iowa State might look a little better. Like, I don't know what to make of it. I'm not sure that I think Kansas is a top four team, because they're just not very good defensively. But Kansas will be good enough, I think, TJ, to beat anybody that they play in the Big 12 on any given Saturday.
Yeah,
like it's road, home doesn't matter. Like when you can go out and gain 600 yards of offense, when Jalen Daniels can go out and do those types of things again, KU can beat anybody anytime. That doesn't change.
As I mentioned, this is literally just like a copy and paste of the 2022 season for KU, I think, except without the, you know, surprise factor of like, oh, hey, maybe we're good at football now. You know, it goes back to I was in Norman in 2022 and watching him play Oklahoma. That was, I think, a Dylan Gabriel year was still there. And final score was like 55-50. And it's like, you got to be kidding me. Like, KU could put up 50 points on the road in Norman and they lost a football game. Like, that might be what we're on pace for. Like, it's kind of like it wasn't going to be a great defense, but nobody knew. Nobody knew if it was going to be good or bad. Like, the linebacker room, I think, is pretty good. I think that the front line is pretty good. I think that just yesterday, the secondary just got so exposed. And whether that be by design by Brandon Sorsby, he can run, and maybe that was a focus to try to contain that. But, man, he made him look silly, and it doesn't really make a ton of sense.
Yeah, look, the two losses they had, the two competent offenses they've played this year, they've given up 31 and 34 points. So we'll see. We just have to see, I think, a little bit more. We know the offense will be great. How much better can the defense get? These are questions we had coming in. They lose a lot of great players out of that secondary, and that secondary has struggled right now. They get the same UCF game, team that K-State just played. They got to go there, and then they got to go to Texas Tech, and then they got to follow that up with the K-State Sunflower Showdown game. So here we go. That's what makes the Cincinnati loss, I think, the most disappointing. Mm-hmm. Is now this is a pretty rough stretch of schedule here. Back to back road games, a second leg of that against what I think is probably going to be the best team in the Big 12, and then back home for your rivalry game.
Man, there could have been a chance KU is 5-1 going to Lubbock. Like, I saw that tweet and it's like, gosh, could you imagine that game?
Yeah, that would be, and boy, it'll be fun. But here's the thing about KU. They could go to Lubbock and beat Tech. And they could. They play that caliber of offense. So we'll see. We'll talk to Sharia Slotta later in the week, get his take on it as well. When we come back, though, we're going to dig in on the Chiefs with Joshua Briscoe, the Chiefs Radio Network.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
digging deeper with the teams you follow. It's another Sports Daily Insider interview on KFH.
And we welcome you back in here on Sports Daily, and we are glad to be joined by Joshua Briscoe of the Chiefs Radio Network. You can find him on X at JB Briscoe, no E on that Briscoe. Josh, welcome in this morning here. The Chiefs, boy, I got to tell you, we talked about last week, some with you, some without you, about how like the range of outcomes here. The Chiefs winning a high-scoring game was not one of those outcomes that I foresaw as one of the possible scenarios here.
I don't even know if it's fair to the defense to call it a high-scoring game. It was kind of just a good old-fashioned thumping, fellas. And as hopeful as I am, and as much as I fundamentally believe in the Chiefs as an organization being better than people think they're going to be after a couple of bad weeks, you have enough of a sample size to know the Chiefs do this on a regular basis. It looks over, and then 2 weeks later, they're so back, right? That's the cycle of this football team. Even with that in mind, I was enormously impressed, especially by the defense yesterday. Very, very encouraged by the offense getting back on the horse with Xavier Worthy coming back. This isn't quite true. This is a little bit of exaggeration, but they might as well be 4-0. Like, for how I feel right now, it feels they didn't win a Super Bowl yesterday. It wasn't even really a playoff game. But I woke up today and I fell asleep last night feeling about as good as I have after like an early playoff win where just the season gets to continue. And that's kind of what it felt like happened yesterday.
Yeah, that's definitely fair to say. You know, you talked about Xavier Worthy coming back. That was the headline coming into the day. In my mind, we kind of talked about getting him back, like in theory, opens up everybody else. That happened. And then he also had 110 yards of all-purpose offense. So, you know, just what did he bring yesterday? Was it a little bit of that, or was it a little bit of the Ravens defense may not be very good too?
All three things you just touched on, all of that was a part of the story where you get Xavier Worthy back involved and you just remember that he moves differently. I mean, he's just there's nobody else on this roster that moves like Xavier Worthy, because there are very, 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 very few people on earth who move like Xavier Worthy. And he takes a couple of pretty big hits early on, steps out of bounds a couple times to kind of avoid unnecessary hits. You couldn't have asked for anything else from Worthy in my mind. That was as good of a return, with a still question about how that shoulder's going to fare, as good of a return as you could have possibly asked for. So that's a huge win. It does raise the water for everybody else, because that kind of speed demands kind of a, I always think about it as a gravitational pull, where if you're a defense, you're going to start cheating a little bit towards Xavier Worthy's gravity, because he demands that kind of attention, which is always going to be good for whoever's underneath in the intermediate, stuff like that. And your point about the Ravens, very true. They came into this game with a ton of injuries. They're basically running a backup offensive line. The injuries and the state of the Ravens defense definitely matters. But guys, how long has it been? And how many times have we said, please, Chiefs, just go beat this bad defense and put up a bunch of points? I don't think they've done it since Taylor Swift Day against the Bears, where she was at Arrowhead for the first time. You go, oh, well, that's a thumping. Hey, everybody, we saw a thumping. I am thrilled to have it in whatever form and fashion. And the fact that it's the Ravens and not just like an injury-riddled version of the Titans or something, I do think still really matters.
Yeah, it matters. It matters who they played. It for sure matters who they played. I thought something interesting, and we brought this up earlier, Josh, is at Mahomes looked great. The pass offense looked as good as it's looked in a really long time. And that's just going to keep getting better. We all know it is when Rice comes back.
Yeah,
they'll have Thornton still over the top, which I'm glad to see him involved a little bit still yesterday. But all that being said, the running backs carried the ball 24 times yesterday.
Yep.
And they weren't even running that effectively, but they still committed to it. And I feel like that matters a little bit.
I agree. I think it does. And it's not quite, to your point, it's not quite the like breakout explosive Isaiah Pacheco game that gets everybody buying back into what he's going to do the rest of the season. But I do think it's noteworthy that it was good enough. And maybe that's damning with faint praise, acknowledging how poor the running game looked to the start of the season. And Xavier Worthy has the most explosive run of the year, which is the least surprising thing of all time. You think about his involvement in this offense. But you, again, your point, the running backs get 24 carries. And Breshard Smith, I think, had a couple of those at the end. But getting all those guys involved, having Kareem Hunt just be there to execute a bunch of short yardage stuff. The Chiefs are really good on fourth down on both sides of the ball, right? Like, I mean, those short yardage chain movers, they're never going to make your average per carry look any better. And again, this wasn't a solution to all the running game's problems, but it was a good effort from Isaiah Pacheco after just some of the most mind-boggling. I like Isaiah Pacheco. I've remained hopeful that he'll be better off injury and that he's going to kind of get right some point going forward. The mistakes of like facing the wrong end zone, making Mahomes throw the ball backwards is like an unforgivable sin, right? For him to continue getting touches, have a pretty good day on the ground and catch the touchdown is great news for a guy that I don't know if he had the yips or not, but just a guy that I think needs to build a little bit of confidence there. We know what Kareem Hunt is. He did his job exactly, and getting Breshard Smith more running back work I think is really good for an offense that needs that gear. So yes, I am also encouraged by the running game. Still a work in progress, but I'm heartened by that.
Josh, you kind of brought it up there, raising the waters for everybody else. We talked to Pacheco in the locker room last night. He said that's the case for the running back room as well. You know, they're going to get more touches as the defense has to, you know, drop back and prevent a little bit more. But I'm going to switch to the defense really quick. I need to know what your reaction was yesterday to the Leo Chanel interception.
I genuinely, not a joke, didn't know he could do that. That was my reaction. And the other reaction, I don't think I could tell you again now. I think you're tied to some FCC rules, right? I don't remember verbatim what I said, but I'm pretty sure it wasn't PG because it was, holy what? Leo, dude's a freak athlete and we know this. Like he's an extremely fun football player. You could have told me that he was going to like do a push-up over the offensive line before you told me he'd make like a jumping body control one-handed catch. I just could not have been much more impressed by that. It was an unbelievable play by a guy who keeps making these like absolutely bizarre highlight reel freak plays because that's who he appears to be.
It was another successful game against Derrick Henry. We got to talk about, speaking of Leo Chanel, the defense. I did not think the defense would replicate its past two seasons. It is doing that thus far. Lamar left the game a little bit early. They probably would have scored a little bit more, but you know, game flow had as much to do with any of that. If the defense is going to stay this good, now I think we're cooking with Super Bowl aspirations again, because we know the offense is just going to keep getting better. This is a defense that looks every bit as good, honestly, like as they have the last couple of years. I can't believe it, but they do.
Yeah, especially just thinking about how different everything has looked since week one in Brazil, where the complicating factors against the Chargers, and I'm just going to have to go back to that as our kind of like negative point, because that's the last time it was a negative. But the secondary's communication was clearly bad. There was busted coverage and it just sort of seemed like general confusion. And I'm still a little bit wary of the four-man pass rush, but Ashton Gelati and Omar Norman Lott as the new faces there have a chance to kind of overperform the expectations a little bit. George Karloftis, I think, has been ramping up a little bit these last couple of weeks after a really slow start. Still some tough moments for Charles Aminahou. Chris Jones with a really nice game, fresh off of the plane and the family funeral. And you're going to talk about a weird day of getting to the stadium like an hour before kickoff, if even that. I might have been landing an hour before
20,
kickoff.
20 minutes he rolled in.
Unbelievable. And you wouldn't have known it if we didn't know it. So I am giving the defense an absolute ton of credit. I'm glad you mentioned Derrick Henry also, because it's just been, I remember this is a throwback here I wrote for The Athletic for a period of time. And I think about all the time that Super Bowl run and leading up to that Chiefs Titans AFC championship game. And just, this is the most right I've ever been about anything. So I'm still taking victory laps on it years later, as you can tell. But I just remember that my take essentially on this column that I built all this evidence for and all of it was, Patrick Mahomes isn't going to lose to Derrick Henry. Like, Ryan Tannehill is their quarterback. You have to keep up with this Chiefs offense. Now, obviously, the Chiefs have evolved since then. It's a different team for Derrick Henry. But the ethos there has remained that you can't just run the ball and keep a good offense on the sideline and automatically win football games. You don't get to do make it, take it, which I feel like is kind of the thing that people miss in a lot of the, like, ball control, run the clock, keep the quarterback on the sidelines kind of analysis. The Chiefs just haven't had an offense to fear that way over these last couple of seasons because of all the evolutions they've gone through. They've had functional offenses, but not threatening ones. Well, yesterday, the fireworks come out. Derrick Henry has a fine day and a couple of plays you'd like to have back, but nothing backbreaking. And all of that's happening while they are pretty effectively corralling Lamar Jackson yet again. I might be skipping on to the next topic with you guys, but I really like Lamar Jackson. I've really liked Lamar Jackson for a long time. He's an incredible football player. At some point, even I have to look at this and go, what is happening here? Is this Spags just absolutely in his head? And I think, yes, I do think that this is a Steve Spagnuolo thing as much as anything, but Lamar has to do something like fundamentally different to eventually get through an AFC championship game, to make a Super Bowl. And as loaded as the AFC's been throughout his entire time as the starter there, I just don't know when that's going to happen for him.
Yeah, that was kind of the question that arose last week once we saw the Ravens lose on that Monday Night Football game. And it was like, one of these teams is going to be 1-3. And that is unbelievable to think about. And it was kind of like, who feels worse as a 1-3 team? Will it be the Chiefs or will it be the Ravens? The Ravens are 1-3, and now they're really injured, and more injured than when they came into the game. You can't feel optimistic at all as a Ravens fan, I feel like.
No, and they're in the thinner division, or at least this was the case during yesterday. I think this is still true, but it's closer now, which is great for us. But I think for the Ravens, I think the idea for me was, well, they're going to be in a better place the rest of the year at 1-3 than the Chiefs would have been, because I was thinking the Chargers are probably 4-0 going into week 5, which again, spoiler, they're not. The only thing that the Chiefs have done this year that the Chargers haven't done is beat the Giants in New York. So shout out to Jackson Dart. Made a whole bunch of fans back here, I guess. But for the Ravens now, it's not just that they're 1-3 and that the Steelers are 3-1. There's plenty of time for them to make up that ground. They haven't played the Steelers yet. Like not only can the Ravens still make the playoffs, they can still win the division. But the defense is a legitimate problem. I have no idea what to think about Lamar's hamstring at this point. That the way they handled that yesterday, I thought was pretty poor, just in terms of like trying to at least get your messaging straight. But they have a path to get back. I don't know that they have the horses for it. I think the offense is probably good enough, and the rest of the league doesn't have a gear as good as I think the Ravens' offense can still be if Ronnie Stanley and Lamar Jackson are on the field. Like, that's kind of the floor for me there, I guess, now. But the vibes are atrocious. And I think for the Chiefs, the standings would have been atrocious, but the vibes would have been salvageable because you know that your best skill position player is still coming back in week 7. I don't know if the Ravens have a particular level of hope like that. Right now, it feels like they're one more kind of surprise, weird loss away from beginning to kind of chalk up this season as a loss. And maybe you're talking about a new head coach next year. And I don't know if that's entirely fair to Harbaugh, but again, it kind of seems like something's broken in that Ravens team, or at least something breaks against the Chiefs.
Yeah, I still believe in the Ravens. Here's something that bugs me a little bit, Josh. Are we okay to be bugged by Harrison Butker yet? 3 missed field goals, 2 missed extra points. We know how many tight games the Chiefs play. Back of my head, it's like this little voice like, Butker might be a problem this year. Like, what is going on here?
Well, I can answer your first question, which is that, yes, it's okay to be bugged. The second question, what's going on here? I don't know. And the kind of scary thing is, I don't know if Butker knows. I don't know if Dave Tobe knows. I do feel like you can have some confidence. I don't know if you can rest easy, but you can rest a little bit knowing that those guys should figure it out. And Butker has had problems in the past with the coming off the ankle injury and then having some issues in the shorter yardage kicks and all that. But this seems different because you've seen it at various depths. It's not just the short stuff. It's not just the long stuff. You've just seen him be off. And I know there's been talk about him like collapsing to the knee, and they talked about it preseason. And then last week, Tobe said that's not a problem, even though Butker did drop to a knee, at least I think in that one miss prior. So right now, I think what you have to do is kind of recalibrate your expectations, where until further notice, and this could still change, but until further notice, you have to treat Harrison Butker like something you have not treated him as over the years, which is a kicker. You just have to kind of acknowledge that, hey, at some point you're going to have a guy come out here who's not one of your typical 11, and he's going to kick this ball and you're going to hope it goes through. Maybe you can expect some of them, but I don't think you can expect the 58-yarder automatic. I don't even know if you can expect the shorter, or, you know, the PAT was the one that got moved back an extra 15. You got to make all of them. I'm not going to make any excuses for him. He's extremely highly paid. He's going to be highly paid next year. There's not like a real like panic button escape. And I don't think he's got like the yips necessarily, but something is out of whack with Harrison Butker. I feel like it's completely fine to say that because he knows that. And you have a few more weeks here, I think, to kind of evaluate what direction it's trending in. But he needs to just go out and have a clean couple games in a row. I don't need any game-winning walk-off field goals. Just go out there and go 3-for-3 or 4-for-4 on a bunch of kicks, and let's just kind of take a deep breath and hope that he's able to recalibrate.
It's a good month.
Want to get one more in here real quick. Sorry, Josh, from a viewer, just because they asked a question. Austin asks about Juju. I think, look, we're all happy with Juju. I think the question with Juju becomes, what roles, when Rice comes back, is it Rice and Thornton and Worthy that we see primarily? Where does Juju fit in, or how does this sort out? I mean, we got to get there first, but how do you right. think that room sorts out?
Well, you mentioning Rice, I think, was the right answer to the viewer's question. I really did think Juju was going to be hugely involved in the pre-Rice section of this season because they trust him to do the dirty work, to run the little rub routes, to be able to block on the perimeter. Juju is effectively like your do-everything guy right now, or, you know, again, dirty work guy. Mitch Holthus calls him the door hinge. I think that's all very, very real. So You have the good problem, I think, when Rashee Rice comes back, where Juju can be out there just in dirty work situations, where you can have him out there still in the red zone because Patrick Mahomes knows he's going to be at the right place at the right time. And maybe you're not running two tight end sets. Maybe Noah Gray's not on the field because Juju's out there in the slot. I do think, and this is with genuinely like enormous respect for Juju and the way he plays and how reliable he has been, I do think your 1-2-3 need to be Rice, Worthy, Thornton. And that's, I mean, I'm glossing over Hollywood there too. This team hasn't had too many receivers in an extremely long time. And you probably remember, and talking in St. Joe, the Chiefs were saying all preseason, all training camp, hey, this is like the best group of receivers we've had 1 through 7. And I kind of believe them on that in terms of depth. But then that depth was immediately elevated where you're 2, 3, and 4, where now you're 3, 4, and 5, or you're 1, 2, and 3, losing Worthy and Rice both. So I think you just got to tip your cap to all the guys who have stepped up so far. And I do think there will still be usage for Juju and then maybe Hollywood even after that, just because I think that what Juju does is something that Andy Reid values so, so much. But I also think Hollywood's going to continue to look a lot better when he is not the number one option or the fastest receiver on the field, which is just not what he is anymore at this stage in his career, when Xavier Worthy's out there or when Tyquan Thornton's out there. So again, I think these are all very good problems. I am interested to see how they shake out, but like excited to see a new movie I want to see as opposed to nervous about it.
Depth in that room is something the Chiefs have earned over the last few years for as many resources as they've poured into it. Yes. Josh, we didn't have time. It's okay. Jags up next, Monday Night Football. You guys will have us covered. The good news is we'll preview that game with you Monday. So we'll save our Jags talk for then. Appreciate it. Thanks for being here again this morning. We'll talk again next week.
I hope they're always this much fun. We'll talk to you next week.
Right. All right. There goes Joshua Briscoe. Follow him, JB Briscoe, on X.
And now, digging deeper with the teams you follow, it's another Sports Daily Insider interview on KFH.
It is Jalen Thompson with a postmortem. Jalen, it's a sad day. Royals are not playing in the postseason. Jalen Thompson, the Kansas City Star, Royals insider, joining us. It's the last time we'll probably talk to you for a few weeks until the offseason gets moving. The Royals end with 82 wins. The preseason odds had them at 83.5. So they didn't get there. We've asked the question a billion times over the last 2 or 3 weeks. How do we evaluate this season? But, you know, at the instant reaction, how do you evaluate this season?
I think it's a missed opportunity for the Royals. They had a chance to really build on the momentum they sustained last year, making the playoffs. I think that a lot of it has to just come down to they had chances to win some games that they couldn't put teams away with their offense. And I think that cost them not having that complimentary bat that could support the top four of Michael Garcia, Bobby Witt Jr., you know, Vinny Pasquantino, Salvador Perez. I think if they can get that, whether that is via the youngsters of Jack Caglione and Carter Jensen, or they can go out on the open market to find that bat, I think that's really going to be the key for them next year, because as you've seen, the AL Central has teams that are really strong and they have teams that are going to be upcoming. So the Royals have to figure it out. Otherwise, they're going to be stuck in no man's land with a division that is rapidly getting better every year.
Jalen, I think the biggest question that you can ask around the offseason, around the end of this season is, you know, do you feel better skipping ahead, thinking to like March 2026? Do you feel better heading into that season than you think you did heading into the 2025 season based on what we know now?
I think you feel better in a few areas. I think that if you're the Royals, you like that you have the starting pitching depth that you could really lean on. You saw how injuries ravaged that starting rotation, but you have about eight guys that can really step in and give you all your starts each and every time out. So that's good. You can only play five a week. So you're going to have a couple of guys that either are going to be in the minor leagues and waiting for the opportunity, or they're going to be on another team if you try to improve the roster wherever you may see fit. So I think it's good that the Royals have that starting depth that they can use in a potential trades, but talking with everyone in that building, they know that this window is open for them to make the playoffs and be a contending team. Because you got to remember that every year that you don't make the playoffs, every year that you don't make significant strides, Bobby Witt Jr. has that option in 2029, 2030, where he can say, hey, I want to go somewhere else if that is what he decides. So you got to, you know, try to build a team that entices him to want to keep staying in Kansas City and for the long haul of that contract that he signed.
So next year, Jalen, the biggest issue at hand will be the offense. Carter Jensen, I assume, will split the role with Salvi, similar to what we saw with Freddie. Salvi's kind of confirming that he'll be back. The big hole is going to be in left field. So how do they attack the big hole, do you think? Do they utilize their pitching depth to go trade for somebody, which seems to me more likely than free agency? They've kind of traded the Band-Aid free agency approach before. Like, what do you sense that they'll do to attack that spot?
Yeah, it's probably going to have to be a trade. The off-season, you know, free agents for the outfield is not that appealing. I don't see them being in the Kyle Tucker sweepstakes. I don't see them going and getting someone like Kyle Schwarber. So I think they're going to have to make a trade or find a platoon option out there in left field. But I don't think a platoon option is really going to satisfy the fan base, knowing that you need another bat in the lineup that is consistent. You like what Mike Yastrzemski can bring to the table, but he's going to be in his age 35, actually 36, 37 season. So if he comes back, it'll probably be a short-term deal. They like Adam Frazier, but Adam Frazier is best utilized at different positions as in that utility role. So they're going to have to find someone that can post every day in left field. And if they don't find that, then you're going to be looking at, like I said, platoon options. You might see Michael Massey back out there some. But that's kind of the scenario that you don't want to go down that path of. You want to have someone that takes ownership of that spot.
I think that leads into the question of, you know, how aggressive do they get with this trade? You know, the Royals are an interesting spot. Like you said, they have eight starting pitchers, and it's from the range of, you know, Cole Reagans to Michael Lorenzen. You know, like, where do you put the scale there, and then where do you put the bat between, you know, like you said, Mike Yastrzemski and, you know, Kyle Schwarber? What is the range that you could see them actually going and getting?
Yeah, TJ, I think you have to look kind of mid-range. You know, we all know last year that the Royals were interested in a guy like Anthony Santander there, Jurickson Profar. Both of those guys did not pan out with their current teams that are on now. So, I mean, you kind of got lucky that you didn't, you know, pursue those guys, right? But if you're looking at like the outfield, maybe you look at a guy like Cedric Mullins that could come in and, you know, he'll be on the market. Someone that fits in that budget, a range of what the Royals might be willing to spend. Someone that has experience leading off someone that, you know, is a former All-Star and can, you know, probably fit and adjust well to Kauffman Stadium. That's the first name that I kind of thought of, like, when I'm looking at the free agent market. And if you're looking at a trade, I mean, there are guys that are out there, but it's going to cost. And you're going to have to really decide at what point do you want to trade some of those, that pitching depth. But also, those teams might also be having eyes on some of those younger guys down in single A. And the Royals have a good group of young guys that are really fascinating down there in the minor leagues. So they have to decide, do they want to push their chips all in, or do they want to, you know, kind of make an upgrade while still keeping their options open in the future?
So then I would ask you this, if they're going to trade a pitcher, which one do they trade? Is Bubic going to have enough time to get back healthy? He makes the most sense because of his contract and because of what he showed, but will he be healthy enough for another team to take that on, or who would it be then?
That's going to come with a lot of risk because you don't know. You got to see Bubic be healthy enough to decide if you want to invest in making a trade for him, or do you want to, you know, keep him. You know, but he would be probably one of the ones that you would look at. Maybe you trade one of those younger pitchers that you require in the Freddie Fermin trade. I mean, both Ryan Berger and Stephen Kolick are really strong pitchers. And, you know, if you can't touch Michael Lorenzen or Seth Lugo or Cole Reagans, right? They're signed long-term. That's the core of the starting rotation. So when you take those three guys out, who are you really looking at? Michael Lorenzen is going to be a free agent.
Waka will be there, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, who are you going to trade out of it? Bubic seems like the one that's probably going to be the one that you want to look at to probably move, but like I said, he has to prove that he's back healthy again.
Jalen, so just picturing in my head here, skipping ahead to March because we got a long offseason, we'll start thinking about next season, basically. You're talking about if they bring in this bat, it's likely going to be, you know, like a corner outfield bat is what everybody's talking about. In my head, I envision it's going to be like a Vinny at first base, you know, maybe Jensen somewhere in that lineup, and Salvi probably moving primarily more towards a DH-ish role. Like you said, not entirely DH-ish. If that's the case, you know, what is this outfield going to look like? Is a Jack Caglione fit in there, or is it going to be a little bit more of a development period for him?
Yeah, Jack Caglione is going to be probably on the roster next year, and he's probably going to be in right field. I just can't see them not wanting to see that power develop and, you know, kind of break out in a way where he can have a Nick Kurtz type year in 2026. I think that's the projection that he'll be on next year. You got to remember, he had a lot of balls hard. It just found gloves. Mm-hmm. And with Carter Jensen, he's had an incredible month in the big leagues. But there's going to be a book on him. He's going to have to make the adjustment. So we'll see how well he performs. But he looks like someone that's going to be the real deal up here in Kansas City for sure.
Jalen, we appreciate all your coverage and help this year. Give us a World Series prediction here.
It's tough. I think with everything that's going right with Cal Raleigh, who I think should probably be the MVP, I think that Seattle will be there, and I think that you'll get a team like probably the Phillies. I'm going to go Seattle and Philadelphia. I think that'll be a good series. It's going to be a long series for travel, but this might be the year for Seattle. It really might be the year for Seattle. What do you guys think?
Can we just all get on a Seattle Brewers World Series or a Seattle Reds World Series? The Padres would be the Brewers, the Reds, the Padres, the no Mariners. Phillies? I'll even throw the Blue Jays in there. Like, can we get one of these new teams in there? I think I'm pulling for Seattle. My wife's from San Diego, so I got to say Padres. Man, I think it'd be cool for the Brewers to get one, but
just give us some small markets. I want a small market world.
Yeah, I do too. Get the Dodgers and the Yankees and the Red Sox the hell out of there.
It just feels like this is Seattle's time. It just does.
Oh, it does.
I mean, everything has lined up for them to do a good job. I mean, you got Boston and New York playing in the wild card round, so they're going to knock each other out. So that's great for Seattle. I mean,
It is. The upstart Reds get a chance, get the first crack at the Dodgers. Like, let's go.
Yeah.
Let's get the
big Brady Singer could be pitching in one of those series. You never know.
Man. God, that's probably not a good thing. Jalen, we appreciate it. We'll check in throughout the off season here on what you're hearing. And if you have stuff that you want to pop on for, just let us know. Man, we really appreciate all the visits all season long. You enjoy your start to your. I know it comes a little earlier than
say. What do you do now? You go golf now? What do you do all off season, Jalen?
I'm going to sleep for a bit, go see family for a bit, and then, you know, I like video games, so I have a catalog of video games that I need to get done and play.
Need to get through there. Yeah. We appreciate it. Godspeed, Jalen. We'll talk again soon. Thanks for everything this season.
Thank you, Jacob and TJ. Talk to you guys soon. Can't wait.
Yeah, hopefully we get some. Hopefully we get some early winter action in the Royals off season.
Let's do it.
There goes Jalen Thompson, our Royals beat reporter. Go follow him on X. Follow all his work at the KC Star. Such a great job all season, man. 82 wins, right there, TJ. Right there. Honestly, probably a few injuries away from being in this thing next year. But you asked that question on. I don't know how you would not be more excited next year because Cags is called up, because Jensen's called up. Salvi figured it out over the course of the year. We haven't, and maybe someday we talk about the year that Vinny Pasquantino had, but it was an awesome year. Like it's right there. It is right there. Most of the bullpen pieces are back.
It's the same excitement level, and you just learn that you have 10 starting pitchers on your team. It's amazing.
And Jack Caglione called up, and hopefully now with some seasoning to get pushed in there. Anywho, thanks to Jalen Thompson for all his work for us and just in general this season. All right, that does it for us on Sports Daily here for a Monday. Quick shout out to Crestview Country Club. They got a Bourbon and Bites event coming up where they're going to, you know, feed you some beef sliders and a bourbon flight to get in on the bourbon game. The company's going to come in. They do that kind of stuff all the time. Again, the golf's great. Finally got out there a little bit, but they do events like this all the time. Give them a call. Give Crestview a call. Tell them we sent you. Ask about all the different kinds of memberships that they have available. TJ, good stuff. Mondays are so crazy. Like, we don't even have time to really dig in on anything, it feels like. So we'll continue those conversations, and we get a double night. A doubleheader Monday Night Football to talk about tomorrow.
I need a nap before we get to that Monday Night Football. Late night coming back from Kansas City after a big Chiefs game for me. These Monday mornings are going to be real sleepy, but the coffee is getting us through.
The coffee is getting us through. We appreciate it. Hey, it's National Coffee Day, but maybe never a better time. We'll be back tomorrow for Max. Thanks to Josh Briscoe, Wyatt Thompson, Jalen Thompson. You can go back and listen to all those interviews on the Odyssey app. For TJ, I'm Jacob. We'll see you tomorrow.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.